This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A new report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation finds that 228,000 children in Michigan have had a parent incarcerated. That accounts for 1 in 10 children in the state. The Michigan League for Public Policy says that should cause the state to re-examine its policies for those children and the parents who spend time behind bars. Alicia Guevara Warren is the Kids Count Project Director for the Michigan League for Public Policy. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
So when you look at these numbers, what does this say about where things stand in Michigan right now for the parents who are behind bars as well, or have been behind bars, as well as their children?
You know, what we know is that losing a parent to incarceration can be very traumatic for children, first and foremost, you know, thinking about the kids. And secondly, you know, when we looked at this national data that was collected, we found, like you said, that, you know, 10% of kids in Michigan have had a parent incarcerated. This is one of the highest rates in the country. Only Indiana and Kentucky have higher percentages of children who have been incarcerated. And when we think about, you know, the 5 million kids across the country, including the 228,000 here in Michigan who have had a parent incarcerated, that's a pretty large number. And in fact, Michigan has the fifth largest population of kids who have had a parent incarcerated, only behind California, Texas, Florida, and Ohio. And, you know, a lot of this we can say is as a result of our nation's over-reliance on mass incarceration. And I think we can definitely see that it's had a devastating impact not only on our economy and our state budget, but also on, you know, all of these children who have been impacted. We've seen, increased poverty, homelessness, and hunger, and, you know, a real emotional pain for these children.
We've had a number of people on here to talk about criminal justice reform. Do these numbers make a case that criminal justice reform should be examined from the standpoint of keeping families intact?
Absolutely. You know, when we look at it, we know that incarceration really destabilizes children's lives and really severs that connection to their parent. You know, national data show that approximately 15% of children who are impacted by this issue who have a parent in a state prison are under the age of 4. So you're talking about a very critical time of development and that time that they're really, you know, creating that bond with that parent. And it's really, jeopardized because of the incarceration. So, you know, looking at first and foremost, reducing our over-reliance on incarceration and thinking about, you know, there's some legislation before the legislature right now around presumptive parole. We know that, you know, many prisoners are actually serving well beyond their minimum sentence and are denied, you know, release by the parole board, even though they qualify as a low risk to reoffend. And we also know that there are studies that have shown that Michigan tends to incarcerate people at longer rates than other states. So, you know, thinking about what other things can we do other than incarcerating people, can, you know, and how do we reduce that incarceration? So the use of diversion courts, thinking about, you know, the raise the age issue and how we can remove our 17-year-old children from our adult system, and re-examining expulsion practices like zero tolerance and issues related to the school-to-prison pipeline. So those are all things that we can think about as far as, you know, sentencing and criminal justice reform. But I think the big issue that comes out of this report is, you know, we've really left behind many kids and families and communities without the adequate resources and support that they need to really be able to go through and this really emotional and financial strain that's put in their lives because of incarceration. So how do we help, you know, these kids and families?
All right, I want to get to that in just a moment, but before we go there, I think it's also important to raise the issue here of safety. You know, I suppose there's some people who hear about young children who have parents incarcerated and might say, but don't we have to also make sure that that child is not exposed to someone who could do harm to them? And how does that factor into this equation of wanting to keep families together, wanting to address criminal justice reform, but at the same time also making sure that a child is not kept with someone who might cause them some sort of harm?
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of the point. I mean, that we have to keep kids in the forefront of all of the decisions that are made, you know, and their safety and their best interests are clearly the number one that should be, you know, thought of when these decisions are made. But that also includes understanding that, you know, we can provide tools and counseling and resources to parents who are incarcerated so that they can be, you know, better parents to their children, so that they can be better, you know, financial supporters and have better employment opportunities when they do reenter their communities. And we can think about how all of that works to even strengthen the communities that they're from and reduce crime rates and these things and improve the life of kids. So there are a number of things that we can do to address that, but clearly, you know, protecting the child is very, very important.
Give us an example of some other things you think that should be done specifically for the person who is incarcerated and who has children and presumably they're going to be released from prison at a point when the children are not yet grown and out of the house and out living their own life.
You know, one of those things is really, you know, we see a lot of people who are formerly incarcerated return to the communities and really struggle to find, you know, a job. A lot of times, you know, they're filling out that job application and have to check that box that says, you know, I have a criminal history or I have a criminal record. And so looking at how we can be more supportive through ban the box policies so that that doesn't automatically disqualify someone from being considered for employment. And the other part of that is ensuring that they have the right education and training that they need to access, you know, the jobs that are available to them in the communities that they live in. So providing, you know, that training and that education while they're in prison is very important. And then also continuing that support once they're released, you know, whether it's to help them continue, you know, with their training, facilitating access to housing assistance, just, you know, kind of those basic skills that people need to be successful in their return.
Understanding that all of the concerns about corrections reform are not necessarily based on cost. Would there be some additional spending being done, though, if you're going to properly train and educate people so that they are ready when they step out of being incarcerated to get a job, find housing, et cetera?
Absolutely. I mean, it will take an investment, you know, and we've had several states go through and work with, you know, the Council of State Governments and figuring out how to reduce the costs of incarceration, and, you know, really reforming the corrections system. And what we've seen is that other states have been able to take those savings and reinvest them in, you know, programs that work, like, you know, reentry initiatives, employment, job training, those types of things that are going to work. So it definitely does require some investment, but it also requires us rethinking our correction system and how we can reduce costs and reinvest those savings into the system.
What specifically do you think the state should be doing for a child who has a parent currently incarcerated and you know, they don't have that parental authority figure with them? Maybe there's another parent who is taking care of them. But what specifically should the state do in terms of targeting those children who have a parent who's currently in prison or in some other way incarcerated?
So I think one of the bigger things for people to keep in mind, you know, a lot of times children they're not at the forefront of decision making, and, you know, in some cases rightly so, right? But a lot of times we don't think about the children who are connected to these parents or these individuals who are being incarcerated. So how do we keep them in mind during any kind of sentencing or prison location decisions? There's a document called the Children of Incarcerated Parents Bill of Rights that has many principles and guidelines that people working in the justice system can kind of follow and think about when they're doing this type of work. Then secondly, really thinking about how we can maintain that relationship during incarceration. And some of that is factored into, you know, prison location decisions as well. You know, oftentimes people are incarcerated, you know, pretty far away from their homes and their communities, and there become, you know, transportation barriers to being able to visit, and those costs to getting there. So helping to think about how that relationship can be maintained and facilitating that access, but also really providing that basic support for these kids. We know that they are more likely to experience anxiety and depression issues. So making sure that they are connected to the right type of counseling supports or mentoring within their communities to have that support that they need to really get through a pretty, a traumatic event.
In terms of prison location, I'm sure there's a lot of factors that go into where someone is sent after conviction, and that may include security. Do they have to go to a more secure facility, et cetera? So would the argument be that prison location is factored in there along with those other things, such as what level of offender they are, what sort of place that they should be in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just one thing that has to be considered. It's the security issues. It's also thinking about the types of, some prisons offer various, different types of programming based on somebody's needs. So that's another factor that needs to be considered. So there are a lot of things that are already considered. We just want to ensure that we're also thinking about the children and the families that are impacted as well.
A child going to visit a parent in a prison situation, that could be, I suppose, a little scary in some cases, and people may worry a bit. Would you also, I guess, want to see that there are some extra precautions taken safety-wise and, to make sure a child maybe doesn't, has less of a chance of seeing something that you wouldn't want them to see that might, happen behind bars?
Absolutely. So, there are some examples, from around the country of facilities that, make more family-friendly type of environments available to, kind of facilitate that access and ensuring that it doesn't quite feel like a prison or look like a prison and that they're not exposed to, those types of things that we would be afraid of and, really protecting the child. So absolutely, it would be about, ensuring the best way to maintain that relationship and facilitating that visitation.
How about financial resources? Obviously, if a parent is behind bars, they're not earning a living. So are there things that have to be considered in terms of the well-being of that child financially?
Absolutely. So, when this data, what it looks at is an actual parent who was living with the child prior to the incarceration. So we know that if the father is the one who becomes incarcerated, that the average family income drops by 22%, really leaving families unable to afford, basic necessities like food or utilities, rent, medical care for their children. So clearly, we as a community and as a state need to ensure that we're facilitating, a family's access to, various services, whether it's financial services, child care assistance, even legal assistance, because there are a lot of costs involved, not just, from losing that income, but due to, legal costs and fines and court fees and visitation and all of those things. So absolutely, we need to be sure that we're not only thinking about the emotional side of how a child and their family is impacted, but also the financial burden that's often placed on the parent and the family left behind.
You noted earlier that one of the things you'd like to see done is kind of address some of the things up front that lead people into crime. I don't have statistics in front of me, but my guess would be that a lot of people who end up going to prison had someone in their family go to prison before them. Are there things that you think the state can do to try and break that chain or break the tie there that takes someone who has been part of a family with a criminal history and leads them ultimately to prison themselves?
Absolutely. When we think about how we can, best address the issue, it's really about thinking about investing in our kids early on, right? Kind of that early childhood programming, ensuring that they have access to, a quality preschool, that they have access to a quality, K-12 school and have those, same opportunities, and that they're living in communities that are vibrant, that are safe, that, have low crime rates, that they have access to the same supports and resources that that they need in order to be successful. So early childhood is, has a major impact on ensuring, better outcomes for kids. And then also thinking now, you know, we should be addressing issues related to the school-to-prison pipeline, specifically looking at, you know, zero tolerance and our expulsion practices and how all of that factors into children becoming, you know, involved in the justice system and having that first contact. So, you know, there are a lot of things that I think we can be doing with our kids. And some of that is also for, you know, our older, you know, population, really thinking about, you know, ensuring that people have access to mental health and substance abuse services, because oftentimes those are the things that can land somebody, you know, in trouble with the justice system.
Now that the report has been released and the numbers are out there, what is the hope on behalf of the Michigan League for Public Policy in terms of what you are looking to see policymakers, lawmakers, et cetera, do with this?
You know, the report really is grim for kids and families in our state. And I think what we really need to be focusing on is, you know, reducing our over-reliance on incarceration, revisiting, you know, these packages around reforming our criminal justice system, and really raising awareness about the issue and ensuring that our community organizations and community partners are talking to one another, our government programs, to make sure that we're identifying these children who are impacted by, you know, incarceration, and that we are providing them with the supports and the services that they need to really be, you know, be successful as well.
Alicia Guevara-Warren, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Alicia Guevara-Warren is the Kids Count Project Director at the Michigan League for Public Policy. Links with more information about Michigan's children with incarcerated parents can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.